I'm Mark Morzinski. I'm a program manager in Azure Active Directory. I'm on the customer success team, which is one of the ways Microsoft is out there helping customers deploy Azure AD and EMS successfully. We also have fast track, partners, system integrators also available. And we take the feedback from those programs and work it back into the product to make deployment better and easier for you. The customer success team specifically is part of product engineering. We work directly with customers on deployments to ensure they're successful, as well as understanding the challenges and the value they see from these deployments. Unilever is one of my customers. I'm up here with Holly and Bob.
Yeah, so I'm Bob Walsh. I'm the Director of Email Identity and Directory Services for Unilever.
Holly Lockhart, IT manager in the same area, responsible for Office 365 and multi-factor authentication.
Yep, so this session is probably going to be a little bit different than what you're used to. The three of us are going to kind of have a conversation as we talk through some of the slides. Also, this is a 45-minute session, not the normal 75-minute session, so we're going to ask if you can kind of hold all your questions till the end. We should have some time to get to it, but we'll stick around after and in the hallway and talk to everybody to get their question answered. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and give it to Bob to get started.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about Unilever. Unilever is a global company with a turnover in excess of 53 billion euros. We have sales in just about every country around the world. You probably know us a bit better by our brand names and some of our products. Mark made sure that I put Ben & Jerry's on here. And Mark, maybe you can tell me, do you have a favorite flavor?
Yeah, Cherry Garcia, right?
Oh, you're not a Chunky Monkey guy.
No.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, though. I will say that I think you've heard it in a couple other presentations today over the last few days. Unilever products are used about 2 billion times a day by over half the households, or nearly half the households on the globe. So it's a rather large company, for sure.
If anyone hasn't had any ice cream, see me after. We'll go get some.
Okay, so we're going to talk about now how Unilever IT supports the business, because that's what we're all about, supporting the business of Unilever. We have about 100,000 users across about 190 countries. Back in 2014, we signed an enterprise agreement with Microsoft, which allowed us to unleash the enterprise subscription licenses for Office 365, and we like that. We also, as time moved on, we bought some additional licenses, some Azure AD premium licenses, as well as Intune licenses to help us move along in time. Let me set the context a little bit around the Unilever operating environment. We have desktops, laptops, thin clients, and mobile devices. I ran with a group of team in Unilever, we ran the XP to Windows 7 migration. At that time, we built a global, one platform for all of our global Windows platforms. So when we deployed Windows 7, 8, and now 10, we have one build. That one build supports 23 different languages and allows us to evergreen. And the evergreen was really important for us. Evergreening the technology allows us to keep up with the changes as time goes on throughout the year and years to come. We also support, as you might expect on a mobile platform, Android, iOS, and Windows phones. So when we started this presentation, putting it together, Microsoft asked us, well, why'd you really start all this? Can you articulate that to the audience? Well, I put myself back into about 2014, and what we really did is we had a management discussion that said, hey, we really needed to be more dynamic in response to the changing end user needs. And really what that meant is our users weren't just coming into the office to do business anymore. Our IT users were a field. They were trying to sell our products. They needed to be more flexible, not tethered to an office with a laptop, and have to come into the on-premise environment all the time. So we really need this mobility started to play up really big for us. So what did we do? Well, when that challenge came to us, a lot of us came together. We had our CTO team, we had our security team, and security became really prominent at that time. And we really knew as we moved outside the protected on-premise perimeter, we really needed to step up our game and really feed this into a bigger framework for security. So this was part of it. We also brought in some of our geography IT teams, which really enabled, they were closer to the business and they could give us that insight from the users as to how they were going to use it. So what did we have? We had a design goal that we really wanted to have an integrated, secure identification and access system, a way to build that out, a framework to do it. And we had started deploying FIM, so we understood what identities were, but we really wanted to leverage some of that identification. So what were our design goals? We wanted to leverage the cloud. We wanted to leverage the cloud for the efficiencies and the reach that it would bring to you. We also had to improve our security, right? And it wasn't just about leveraging the cloud, but it was leveraging the cloud in a secure way. We wanted to support in anywhere, at any time, and on any device way of working. And that was really important to us in these design goals. Mobile first, we wanted to create applications that could run on just about any device. The laptop in the office tethered to a network was becoming old. Our users didn't work in that way anymore. You know, a lot of times you come into the office nowadays to socialize, but the real thinking and the working happens outside the office. How can we support that? That's what we wanted to bake into these design goals, and we could see that coming. Ultimately, we wanted to improve the end user experience, and that was providing that security, making sure that they had that anywhere, anytime access, but also making sure that, you know, the end user experience wasn't that bad and we could improve over time. And that was really important because we knew this was a moving technology and we wanted to offer what we could at the time and then look for improvements incrementally. And that's where that integrated secure identification and access management kind of framework fit in.
So one of the things we were talking about earlier this week was about that. And I asked you a really good question, I thought, which is, was it something that this framework, was it something that you guys in IT were driving, or is it something that the end users in the business were asking you to drive?
Yeah, you know, Mark, I don't think there's anything in IT that we do for IT only.
Right.
We support the business. And whether the business is a user that's out selling more product or making it happen for Unilever, or it's about getting the efficiencies gained and putting it back into the business in a different way. But that's what IT is about. We don't do anything that's IT for IT's sake. And anything else to add on that, Holly?
Well, at that point in time, we actually changed sort of the work perspective in Unilever.
Yep.
It was the work is what you do, not where you go concept. And in order to support that, a lot of this came about.
Yep,
absolutely. So I want to just step back a moment and talk about how we're organized within Unilever. We have a platform management. That means my team is responsible for end-to-end for email identity directory services. And when we select solutions, it's really about looking at what are we going to be left with? You know, there's a lot of products out there, and you can badge a lot of products together, but my responsibility is when I deliver it to support it and make sure that we can deliver it to this global scale. And as we said earlier, it's 100,000 people, 190 countries. It's not a small environment that we support. But when we look at solutions, we really wanted to look, make sure that the solutions matched our design goals and these design principles. We looked at building to scale and the ability to change. That was very important to us. Sustainability was really important. We wanted to move to the cloud so that we weren't incrementally building out all kinds of boxes on-prem that we could do seamlessly in the cloud. Not seamlessly, but at least we could leverage what other people are using as well as ourselves, and that's where our sustainability came in. We had evolution as a mindset. We knew we were early on in front of the pack, so to speak, as people will say in our company, but we knew it was for the right reasons. Our identity, I said we had FIM earlier, FIM Identity Management, we really started to look at it. We really wanted to make sure that any solution we had started to look at identities in a different way. Up to this point, we were looking at all identities being internal, in our internal AD, and I'll talk about that in a few more moments. Applications, I put on here, you know, governance, because you say, wow, application management, that fits into these solutions, why would you have governance up there? Well, I can tell you, when you start talking about solutions and products and you're looking at them all, everybody will bring quite a few different solutions to the table and applications. What we had to make sure is when we looked through the solutions architecture, that it all tied back to our design goals and make sure that we were able to really deliver a solution that made sense and that could scale over time. And keeping that integrated approach in mind, we thought was important. We also wanted to look at adoption. Remember we said taking care of the user, making sure that it was easier for them in the tools. We also wanted to see as folks grew from a laptop to a smartphone, then to an iPad or to a Windows device, that we had those capabilities to see them incrementally building and try and understand how they were using it in some of our usage teams. And then the financials had to stack up. We didn't get an open checkbook, I can tell you that right now. And we really had to make sure that whatever we had, we could scale over time and that we could actually show some savings to offset some of the costs that we were putting as we were moving forward in Azure. And last but not least, all the solutions and the applications we picked had to be able to be delivered as a service. We run with third parties that support a lot of our products. We needed to be able to see these third parties reach out for training and really keep up with the technologies over time. We couldn't take a product that was maybe built in one country and expect someone across the globe to be able to run it. We needed that leverage, we needed that capability to make sure that we could keep that training up to date and they could understand as we release some of these new technologies on how to support it and how to work with the vendors. So that brings us to the Microsoft technologies. And We're going to talk about, I like to talk about it as a puzzle.
Sure.
And I know we've gone back and forth. I look at it, we liked Office 365, and Holly will get into it in a few minutes at everything that Office 365, why we liked it. But in order to get there, we had to upgrade our infrastructure. And that's the second piece. We had to bring in ADFS 3.0, and I'll talk about how we went from 2 to 3 and some of the considerations we had to undertake. When we got to 3.0, we also knew we could unleash Azure AD, and that really made us happy because we could start to look at how we handled identities and handle them in a different way than we ever could before when we just had an on-premise environment. I talked about security. Well, guess what? We really wanted to up our game in security, and we brought in Azure MFA, and that was like the fourth piece of the puzzle. But you know what? We really didn't like having to have to answer challenges all the time. And Holly and I were early on the testing case. We were like, boy, there's way too many challenges. How can we improve it? Well, guess what? We went back, we talked to Microsoft, and we said, let's look at device conditional access. And that was really aimed at improving this user experience. Well, guess what? There was another piece we had to plug in, and that was Azure AD Connect. So over the course of about 12 months, plus or minus, we had to upgrade this infrastructure in Unilever. And we had a lot of fun doing it. I'll say that one.
Fun.
Since you didn't have to do it, you had a lot of fun doing it, right?
Absolutely. And so we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to turn the mic over to Holly a bit now to talk about the Office 365 piece.
Sure. Thanks, Bob. So yeah, we had a mandate to leverage the cloud, and of course that's a little easier said than done. We quickly found out you have the clicker, Bob. So we implemented Office 365 for the enterprise, and we knew we had lots of prerequisites because we are traditionally an Office 2007 shop, and we had a lot of apps that we needed to test that hooked into Office before we could even get that far. Plus, we had a new model that we needed to license people directly as opposed to the true up at the end, so we actually built a whole process within FIM in order to create that entitlement. So we had a list of deliverables that came along with all of this stuff. We knew we were going to do Exchange Hybrid. We had 100,000 plus mailboxes we needed to move. We had to give all these people OneDrive, and our current homepage was SharePoint 2010 on premise. And we needed to move it to SharePoint Online. Challenges, yes. So for us, as I said, we had a lot of things to put in front of being able to get to the point of where we could actually start to deploy Office 365. At the same time, we went through an entire network uplift because our network wasn't ready for Office 365. And we needed to actually, in order to be successful, we needed to make that happen. And of course, there were more prerequisites that came after that. Of course, in order to actually do Office 365, we wanted to use single sign-on, and to use single sign-on meant we put in DirSync originally. And we quickly figured out that our way of managing identity wasn't going to work with DirSync, so that was very quickly replaced with FIMSync, which, as Bob mentioned, at this point has been replaced with Azure AD Connect. So in the beginning, our Azure AD tenant was just something that came along with Office 365. We didn't really know much about it, but pretty quickly we started to learn all the other things that we could do now that we had it.
Absolutely.
One of the other things that we ran into as we were putting all this together is just really trying to manage within the admin access. Within Office 365 and Azure, there were fairly limited admin capabilities, and we, in order to get things done, were giving people more access than they really needed. So when PIM came along, Privileged Identity Management, we grabbed onto that pretty quickly. And it gave us sort of that risk mitigation that we needed to be able to know if admins were creating admins and all those elements.
You said you guys have, like we talked before, but you've built like a whole process now using PIM for other workflows.
Yes. So our entire process for managing privileged identity within Azure is built around the PIM process, and it's run through our AD team, actually. So, well, we now have an Azure tenant.
Yep.
and as Bob said, we were doing the infrastructure upgrade. So, that point, identity, it was all about that.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. So we got Office 365 going. We knew we needed to bolt on that ADFS 3 infrastructure upgrade to do it. And really, that was a wake-up call for us, if I can speak honestly. We had to really look at our AD and say, gosh, if we're going to really start to look at how we're going to handle identities and match the right kind of security to the type of usage on it, we were certainly gonna have to do something differently. And sure enough, we did. We cleaned up our directory. And that's one we say to everyone, take a look at it. When you're going into this space, you certainly want to make sure that it's properly reflected with inside.
So you would really recommend everyone do that?
Oh, yes, because you need to only license the people who need to be licensed too.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? ADFS3 gave us the ability now to look at internal identities and also cloud-only identities. And we're going to talk about it in a few minutes, how we did that in a couple of examples. But that was really the breakthrough for us, and it was a breakthrough in thinking, too. Because we had looked at identities, but we really didn't want to have, inside our internal walls, define everybody. We wanted to say, if you were a third party, and you only needed access to a certain bit of applications, why do we bring you in and inside a directory and really give you access to everything? So that was the real breakthrough for us.
And you have some users that actually aren't being managed by your IT. In the factory, in the blue collar.
Oh, right? Absolutely. So these are cloud-only accounts that we have. And these cloud-only accounts were really what I would consider the non-IT users, typically. And we expect to drive this volume quite heavily. When we go to these environments where the folks don't typically use IT because they don't need IT, but you know what? They are starting to need IT for training. They need it to log on to certain types of HR systems. So we are certainly looking for Azure AD to help us to do that. And you know what? We don't have to license them for all the products by bringing them inside our internal AD walls.
Does anyone else have a similar like environment where there's people not being managed by IT and there's a separate kind of environment for them and all that? Does anybody?
Yeah. Well, we took advantage of it, and we do like it, and we're using it as we speak. Well, I'm going to give us challenges, because as we said, we put a lot of components in. It's Office 365. You put this infrastructure upgrade in. How about the move from ADFS 2 to 3? I will say that when we first looked at it, we looked at how we were going to migrate the applications onto the new platform. And we looked at Azure AD Marketplace. You know, we liked the concept. You know, you could take some of the maintenance you were doing inside and move it to the cloud. There was a lot of applications out there, but if I can be honest, and I said this to Mark, there weren't a lot that fit Unilever. But there were a few, right? And the few that we saw, we took advantage of. And we continue to do that today. We didn't give up there, though. You know, when we moved, we ended up moving all of our applications over. We moved 60 over. And they ended up in the three buckets, and in this priority order that you have on the chart here. We made some custom apps that reside in Azure AD. We also have some internal ADFS 3 kind of applications that are really suited for our internal users. But as soon as we can get them out to Azure Marketplace, we're going to do that. We now have, so we were like 2015 when we started this process, we now have over 200 apps that are in Azure AD. And Holly, maybe you can just talk to those 200 for a moment.
Sure, so we have some of those apps that are just like this, the traditional apps that we've moved out there, the marketplace apps, and then we also implemented App Proxy to go with that. And so it makes up a good portion of those 200 apps in that list.
So how many more do we have to go?
Well, we're done with the big transition.
There was like 75 in demand somewhere out there, I think, in total.
Additional.
Plus the ones that have to move from ADFS 3. Because we don't want that federation there. We want it in Azure.
Yeah. But I will say, you know, at least we were able to move them. And the education was important about what the Azure Marketplace is all about. Really, I can't stress this enough. If more folks work with the application providers and start to make them aware of what the marketplace can do for them and yourselves, it can only help all of us, because we won't have to recreate the wheel 10 times. They'll be in the marketplace, you'll be able to move to them quicker and really take that, you know, additional step out that you would usually have with your vendors in that application. Mark's smiling because I know I'm singing to the choir here with Microsoft, but it's true. I mean, we believe in this.
No, another one of my customers is in the third row, and he was nodding yes to that because he's had
absolutely
similar challenges.
Yeah.
But adding these apps to the gallery, I know you guys have had a lot on ADFS. I know the first app kind of was a learning experience, but how much faster have you guys been able to deploy the app gallery apps versus the traditional ADFS way? And is it worth moving off ADFS to the Azure AD?
Absolutely. I mean, we've set up an app from the marketplace in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, it goes quick. And it's also the other maintenance around certificates you do when you have an app that's internal and you move it to the marketplace, and you know that happens. That's some of the economies we said when we moved to the cloud we wanted to take advantage of.
And the last part on this one is we're going to have a whole thing here about conditional access. I know that's big for you guys, but how much easier is it to do the conditional access deployments with the marketplace versus writing custom claim rules, unless myself or Ramiro goes in there and helps you guys with that?
Those of us who don't write claim rules, being able to just like click the boxes in the UI, much easier.
You like it? Everyone likes that?
And it just works.
Yeah. I will say one of the other challenges, though, and we've said this to you guys and we keep saying on here, is although the tools are there, they certainly can be improved, right? And we're looking for those improvements to come over time. Holly, why don't you just talk about the managing of the apps and some of the improvements maybe?
Sure. Now that we have over 200 apps, it actually won't display them all on the list. So we're looking for ways that we can filter them so it'd be easier to actually see all the app proxy
yep.
apps.
And that's coming in the new portal?
Yes.
A little bit better.
Yes. Great. So we know it will get better.
So we're now going to cast on a little bit. As we started this, we put ADFS3 in. We also started to do some other things. And Holly's going to talk about it, but app proxy really featured another set of enabling technologies that allowed us to move some of these. Remember I said we wanted to make a lot of our apps available to the mobile and on the internet type of environments. This is what we did. Why don't you talk to that, Holly?
Sure. So what we were talking about before, everything was sort of machine-based. We had a VPN on our standard machines, and it was really the only way you got to internal apps except for like email on your phone. So we needed to change that, especially when we talked about one of the deliverables for Office 365 was to move SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint Online. Well, our SharePoint homepage had like 30-something links to applications on it, and more than three-quarters of it were internal. So if you move that page and you didn't make those apps accessible from the internet, it would not be a good experience. So for all of those, we ended up putting in app proxy. We took all of the apps that were web-based and we set them all up and we created this seamless interface between SharePoint Online, SharePoint On-Prem, and a bunch of other applications all sitting internally so that users could just get to it without any barrier in VPN need anymore.
So how do your users like not having to have to VPN now to get to the internal page? What?
They love not having to VPN. They would love VPN to go away.
Does anyone else like to VPN in to do things? Just NASA's? Okay.
The one thing to keep in mind, too, is we actually have multiple connector groups for app proxy. We have the ones for our on-premise apps, but we also use app proxy for our Amazon Web Services environment, and that's how actually we secure access to those applications as well. Yeah, then 75 of them at last count, and I think I made this a couple of weeks ago, so I'm sure there's more by now. So now that we made it all accessible from the internet, we needed to actually make it secure. If you're not going to use VPN, we need to use something else to make sure it's going to work. That was MFA. What we ended up doing is we wanted to enable two-factor authentication. We had all those different users that we were talking about, including the cloud-only users at the beginning. So we had the setup of ADFS 3.0 with the MFA servers on-prem, plus we then used Azure MFA for the cloud-only identities. And at that point, it was a lot of education because one of the things that I think we all went in thinking is that MFA, everybody knows what they do that when they bank. But you have to remember we're in 190-plus countries. So for us, it became a huge learning curve to be able to get people to understand why we were doing this and how to actually use it properly.
And I think that's really important, too, because when we started to put MFA in, we also have a larger security agenda. And it was about making sure that they understood in the context how MFA fit into the total picture, right? And that's really what we needed to get across to our users so that they understood it when they saw it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The other challenges we saw are because we have not just offices, we have manufacturing plants. And with Azure MFA, it was mostly phone-based. And in some locations, there's no cell service. So that wasn't going to work very well. And in other locations, you can't have a cell phone on the floor. It's a safety hazard. So we had to come up with some creative ways to do that, and that's where conditional access came in some places.
Didn't one of your countries of users suggest that you purchase a phone for them if you require MFA?
Yes, several did.
Several.
I was like, does that mean everybody's going to get a cell phone?
Yeah.
No. But also, having to put in multiple instances of MFA is a challenge. Right now, I have multiple ones, and I'd really like to get to one.
Yeah, Mark, you know, we're hoping for this promise comes through for us.
We're working on getting to one MFA very shortly, hopefully. So, yep, we've heard that feedback from multiple customers. We understand the pain points. It's something we're working towards.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then not least, but in the Mac spaces, when we started this journey, Office 2016 for the Mac wasn't out yet. So we had a bunch of different things that we needed to do to work around the fact that they weren't capable of doing that multi-factor yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's an important part. You know, we didn't just do Windows deployments. We also support Macs. The Macs are a bit smaller community of users, but if you think back to what we said earlier, they still need their Macs to do the business. We're not in IT for IT. If the Mac makes driving the business better for them, that's what we have to do, and we have to include them in our full framework, and that was really important to us.
Absolutely. Well, one more thing before we go on. The other thing when we did MFA that we knew right away is that people were seeing way too many MFA challenges. You know, in some cases the token carried over, but for lots of times people were having to actually re-authenticate, and that's where we talked about, yes, it's secure, but we need to make it better. But in the midst of all this, another project came along.
Wow. So does any, maybe raise your hands. How many people know what November 23rd, 2015 was? And no, not anybody from Unilever or Microsoft.
I can tell you.
So how many people, maybe a different question. I'll surface it a little different. How many people ever took a project forward? It's a really large project, and you knew you could fall back, but you really didn't want to have to fall back because there was a lot of pressure on moving forward.
A big, large, yeah. Big bang cut over.
I expect my hand would have been up,
so
I know that.
So who's had to make a change and there was really no going back? Has anyone had to do a project like that in IT, like a core switch upgrade or a firmware upgrade and all the big scary stuff?
Well, that was it.
Yeah.
What we had to do is we had a workday go live for 100,000 users. And you know what? All the components we just talked about were really tested in day one. It's a big cutover. We had our first conditional access app that when you're not on the corporate environment, it was the first time we used our MFA, Azure MFA servers in a big way. It was also the first time we used an Azure Marketplace app, right? So you can imagine it on this Monday. And what was the Monday, Holly?
The Monday before the U.S. Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so we were all wondering whether we were actually going to see a turkey or not, to be quite frank. But you know what? It went off well. It went off without a hitch. We were looking at Microsoft. They were on the call. We were looking at ourselves, our support teams. And I have to tell you, we had very minimal problems, if any at all. I mean, the systems worked the way we hoped they would work. And we were able to introduce these new technologies in such a big way. And it was really exciting and rewarding for all of us that worked hard over those months to bring all these different pieces together.
And you onboarded all those users that normally didn't be managed by IT as well as part of this.
Well, that was the piece about the identities, right? When we talked about some of the workers in our factories and our locations, we created those cloud-only accounts. They also participated in this because we could enable them to do such. And that really gave us that inspiration to take that to a bigger party within Unilever, and we expect that to grow in the next coming years, for sure. And also, we also used some kiosk machines for some of these special cases that we talked about in these environments that we really needed to use so that they could access these systems in a secure way. Because again, we were looking at security. It was a very big issue for us. And going to HR systems certainly made that all more important. Anything else on this that I missed?
No, that's, you got it all.
No, you're good.
Okay. So we talked about all the puzzles, right? Office 365, we wanted to get to. We had ADFS 3.0. We brought in, you know, Azure AD. We started to create these cloud accounts. And we brought in Azure MFA. And we knew we couldn't stop there. And that's the part we want to talk about. You know, Azure MFA is intrusive a bit, and it requires you to really do it quite often, right? And we want, although we met the security for our workday go live. We made the policies. We wanted to improve it because we knew our users wouldn't be happy with that. And one of our design goals was to really improve the experience as we introduced these new technologies. So we're going to talk a little bit about how we did that, and I'm going to turn it back over to Holly to talk about.
So yeah, we talked about conditional access, and we still have VPN for the laptop, so we started with the mobile. And in that case, in order to actually open up the mobile space and to not do MFA challenges and typing on tiny little screens all the time, we looked at doing Intune. And before we could do Intune, we had to implement, this is where Azure AD Connect came in, so we could do the write back and be able to do that authentication that the device became the second factor, as opposed to a direct challenge. So we've enabled that for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. We're very focused on iOS first, and we've been looking at the ability for us to manage the entire device with MDM, but then also the option of being able to do just the applications themselves for people who only need one or two applications, and we don't need to manage the whole device. So once again, there was yet another education that was needed as to why we were changing MDM and why it was going to be better and why they were going to see less MFA challenges, and that's actually incentive for people to enroll their device and move from one to the other.
So you use that as a carrot, huh?
It's a carrot.
Absolutely.
It's unusual to have a carrot instead of needing a stick, so that was a good one. But we you know, we have a few challenges. We have people who work different ways with their mobile phones, and sometimes we end up working one-on-one with people to figure out how to make the tool set work for them.
And I think that's an important part, that people use these devices much different than you and I may use the device, because we're in IT, right? We use them in a certain way, and we have certain products that we use. Our business users have a totally different perspective, and that we really needed to tailor for and understand how they use them to make sure they were getting that right experience. And we continue to do that, right?
Yes, we do. And we'll continue to. Right now, iOS is the focus for the onboarding for these devices. We have Windows Phone that's actually available to put online now. We're still working through some of the Android policies because we have some Androids in our environment that really aren't capable of meeting all the policies. So we're looking at alternatives for how we make that work. So now that we had the mobile figured out, we had to actually go back and deal with our domain join laptops. We had about 100,000 of them. Like we talked about, we needed device write back. So we decided we were going to do workplace join. We had our Windows 7, 8, and 10 devices that we needed to take care of. So 7 and 8 have rolled out. All of 8's done. I heard a third of the Windows 7 ones happened in one day yesterday.
Yeah, we're
doing. How many is that?
It was 21,000 out of, I think, roughly.
So we're pushing these updates out. We'll get them out there for sure, because we've tested them with quite a few different people on a global basis, and it looked really well for us.
Absolutely. So where we see the challenge for us is the Windows 10 setup. It works differently, and for us, it's been partnering with Microsoft to figure out the right way to make it work in our environment and how to move all of that into the workplace join, because obviously our Windows 10, that's our newest OS. It's now our standard one. So every time we build a new machine, it's Windows 10. So we're feeling the pressure to get that working. But we know as soon as we finish Windows 10, we know that the Mac users who we don't use Intune for are going to want to know how we're going to fix that. We're going to look at that one together.
Yes, we will.
So in summary, right? So we started with the Office 365, and that set this entire journey on its way. DirSync, FimSync, have an Azure AD tenant that we didn't have before, needed to provide access from the internet, that's where AppProxy came in, needed to manage all this stuff, that's where PIM came in. Then it was about the security bits. We had the ADFS 3.0 and MFA, premium, the conditional access that we needed. And then somewhere in the middle of all there, we said, oh, wait, you have to do Workday. And thankfully, we had all those other parts done, because then we used it all to do the SaaS apps and the brand new population that we had never had IT services for in the past.
So getting all this done, Bob, did you guys have to add a lot more staff or reduce staff? Or like, what's the staffing kind of look like through this whole project and where you guys are today?
Yeah, we've added some incremental staff. But if we were to do it on-prem, it would have been a lot more staff. Mm-hmm. And I think where we leverage is with some of our partners that provide our service for our operations as it is today. And you know what? Because they were able to train up on these technologies, we didn't have to have a new set of arrangements with it. We just extended it because it was a really extension of the products we had implemented already, yeah, with bolt-ons for the cloud. And really, that helped us. It helped us tremendously. Remember, I said we have financials. We have to make sure that we have a budget. We have to work within that budget, and we were able to achieve that. And we could do a little bit more, quite a bit more, with the cloud than we could do if we just kept it all on-prem. And that's absolutely where we are right now, for sure.
So at the end, like we just talked about, workplace join kind of became key, because everything's about the user experience. Because if you don't make it easy for them to use, they'll go find something else. So in the end, Workplace Join is where we're actually focusing our effort now and getting that complete, and we're well on our way.
Yeah, we see a lot of value, right, in making it simple, getting those design goals achieved, because the users are the ones that'll they'll adopt it or they won't. And if they don't adopt it, you'll start to see all these other applications spring up, because they're gonna need to get their job done, and they're gonna find a way to do it. What we're doing is giving the tools in a secure way and in a functioned way that we can actually help them to achieve their goals for their job. That's really what it's all about.
So yeah, now that we've done all those things, of course the list never ends, so now change is the new norm. Now we have a new list. The first thing is that we have all these mailboxes, 85,000 of the 100,000 have now been moved. So we don't need this giant Exchange on-prem footprint anymore. We're gonna upgrade Exchange, right-size it so that the hybrid continues, but we don't need to have a giant footprint on-prem. Now that we tackled the identity management bits but for the users, but now we need to go back and actually come up with a group management strategy, so sort of tackling the next layer. We want to get to one MFA.
We want you to get to one MFA too.
Can you tell that's a pain point? Yes, I want to get to one MFA through AFS 2016. The other thing that Bob talked about earlier is now that we have the cloud-only accounts we did for our non-IT users in the past, we now want to use it and expand it and use it for all sorts of things. Especially, you know, you talked about at the beginning, being able to take some of the identities that sit on-prem that don't need to do anything on-prem, they just need to get access to some of these cloud applications, get them out of our ID.
And we can do that in a secure way, right, and support them. And I think that's really, really key. This identity, integrated identity and access management was really key. We could start to separate and bring it to the masses within Unilever. And that's the exciting part. It really excited me when we started to piece this together and we got some people in the room who worked on this with us. And it really was an exciting achievement when we really make this happen with Azure AD.
Ah, and on top of that, yes, we want to do the B2B collaboration. We have some large partners, and it only makes sense to leverage that as opposed to also giving them identities in our environment. When we originally started with the new population, we did Azure SSPR for that new population, but we still have our on-prem guys using FIM SSPR. We need to move that, but what we really dream of doing is being able to do SSPR and MFA registrations in one place.
Yeah, and that's part of that economies, right? You get it in the cloud, you can't always adopt it right away, but you know what, it's certainly in our design goals to want to take advantage of it and try and simplify it and take some infrastructure out that we have internal and put it in the cloud and leverage it for all of our identities that are using it, or our IT users for sure. Oops, sorry, huh?
That's okay. Last but not least, the new identity protection, we've been looking at it for a while and we've seen all the opportunity that's in there that we could actually glean a lot of knowledge and put some processes around to definitely improve or lessen the risk that we've got with those identities.
Okay. So trying to summarize a little bit, we wanted to look at our design goals and revisit them again and say, did we create where we started with that mindset, an integrated, secure identification and access management framework? And I think we did. Did we leverage the cloud to drive efficiencies? Absolutely. You know, some of the products I didn't really call out in Office 365, but we also turned up OneDrive. And with OneDrive, we were able to take what used to reside on our client machines and move them up into the cloud. Why is that important? Well, we also took, at the same time, we're now ingesting PSTs and putting that in Exchange Online. How is that helping us? Well, it's helping us because when we do a build, remember I told you we had a global build for all our Windows platforms that we deployed, well, we can take it out of the factory, and instead of having an engineer load from one machine to the other, we're able to just take that machine and drop down all the disk information, all the storage that they had, without an engineer. That's the value proposition that I think in the promise of what we're putting together with all these integrations. That's the exciting bits, right? Because you know you had folks that were doing that. They would shuttle between and turn over a new machine. Gosh, if I can cut that in half, that would really help.
Who's had to do that for their users?
Moving data.
Well, that was part of our design goals and the efficiencies, along with all the other pieces that we talked about the identities and being able to get that reach and extend it beyond the reach into some of these mobile devices. Did we support an anywhere and anytime working framework? I think we have. In fact, as I sat in all these sessions this week, I chose not to use a laptop. I chose only to use my mobile device and MFA challenges and work on the Microsoft suite as well as other applications that we have off of our internal web page that we now have out there. And it was a really good experience. Is there challenges? I don't want to say there isn't any challenges at all. You're going to have that in any new evolving technologies. But I think the important part is that we have the framework and the people in each of the groups that work together and support each other so we overcome all those issues, right? And I think that's really important. Mobile first, well, I just talked about it, right? I talked about how I used my app. I was using my iPad, I was using my iPhone. I was running out of my battery because I kept using them to do different things while I was in some of these sessions. But it really shows the power of what we can do. Did we improve the end user experience? Well, I think that's one that the jury's out a little bit. Because I think we're in a part of the technology, you know, that requires us to do a little bit more, to make it a little more seamless. We're not there yet. I don't think we're there yet. And I think everyone that works in Unilever would say, gosh, you did very good, and because we get some really good scores on end user experience with some of the tools, but we still have a ways to go yet. And we're working with Microsoft and others really to help improve that experience on these mobile devices. And we do that with our laptops, right? I mean, I talked about a single build. It was to get that Unifor core of applications that could evergreen, but we did that because we wanted to make the experience better for that user on that laptop. So it all comes together. You know, when we have the cloud running, you know, the iDrive, OneDrive, and have all of our data up in the cloud, it's a better experience for the user because they don't have to wait 2 days for that machine to be built. They come home, they plug it in, the data comes down overnight, and they come in and they're working the next day. That's the promise of what this can all bring. Okay, and I believe in it. You can see I'm pretty passionate about this because I think some of the technology, if we didn't start doing it, we wouldn't have what we have today. And yeah, there's some challenges, absolutely. And my team supports it. I got end-to-end responsibility, so I'm like you sitting in the crowd. There's a lot to do to make this stuff work. But when you get it and you get it right and it works, you can really see the value of it.
So now that you guys kind of have this and you did all that work, how do you think that will help you when you get the next big like Workday app that has to be used by everybody at Unilever?
Well, I think it's easy.
It makes it a whole lot easier. I mean, I think we, not only because we've done it, but because we've now put that base layer in place that allows us to, you know, add on very easily.
Right.
We have an entire app onboarding process that really just sort of keeps flowing.
We've
talked about
emails,
how many apps we have today, right? I mean, we're talking about that. It just keeps growing, and we're working on a list of them as well. But I think the more we get into Azure Marketplace, AD Marketplace, I think the better we're going to be, because it'll just make it that much faster, that much easier for us to take hold of. And we can help each other for sure. Improved security and usage tracking was one of the last principles or design goals that we talked about. I think we have. We talked about Azure MFA. We talked about device conditional access to try and ease some of that. Absolutely, we're achieved these goals. And I will tell you that the design goals, I think we were quite happy when we got done looking at these, that we really were delivering upon what we set out to do a few years back. So Mark asked me in closing, we really wanted to talk a little bit about some advice. What would we give to others if they were starting where we started? And we put together some ideas. I think you heard a few minutes ago about the advice about getting to your application vendors early and making them aware of what the Azure AD Marketplace can do and what the value is both to them and to you and to the rest of us and how they could leverage that for others, for sure. We didn't do it early enough. We ended up starting with it. We got ADFS3 in, and then we started talking to them, and I would have liked to have been able to done that quite a bit earlier. Two-factor authentication, I think Holly alluded to it a little bit earlier, is don't just expect people will know how to do it because it's available on the internet. We go across 190 countries. There were pockets where people gravitated to it very well and understood it. There were other ones where we really had to take them through the mindset of why it was important, how we were going to protect the identity, and why they needed to go through those steps, and how it fit into the rest of our security framework. That was really important, but we did it. And I can tell you, people now understand it, and they signed up for it. And I think they understand that it's a risk mitigation, you know, opportunity for them to take advantage for their IDs. Lastly, I think the Microsoft product group contacts. I think it's important to know your Microsoft people. It doesn't mean that we're not doing the work, and I don't have end-to-end responsibility for the products we put and the way we support it. But I think, you know, when you're new and new technologies get introduced, it's having that relationship and making sure that we can reach out to people to say, are what we're seeing real? Are these new capabilities, what we should expect to see or not.
Yep, and you guys also had Paul Williams with MCS on site working through some stuff, yes. And he's very helpful.
Absolutely.
He's very...
I have to say, we have good support from Microsoft throughout this evolution and as we've moved through the products. And that's been really helped us to meet our timelines because, you know, our business says all that IT is good. But, you know, if HR couldn't go live on that date, it would have been not a good place to be.
Yep.
But we were able to do it, and we did it because we had good support. Few last comments about the benefits of early adoption, because we did do this some of this early adoption stuff. One of the benefits Holly and I always talk about is we get to influence some of the priorities for delivery. So we were able to work with Microsoft and to say, well, if you're going to bring that in 4 months, can you maybe make it a little sooner? Because you can benefit us and other customers just like us. I think that's a benefit. I think we all had to figure it out as we go.
I know we did.
And, you know, sometimes you're going to find the bugs, right? And
yep.
that's the reality of it. And that's what I said. Look, I think if you don't want to move forward and you're always risk adverse, you'll never get there. And I think what we want to do is we want to bring the right technology with the right security and the right capability to our end users so they can drive the business value. And that's what we're after. And that's really what we want to do in Unilever. And I think this is what this early adoption has given us. It allowed us to drive and give the tools that they could do to drive the business and not be have to come into the office and work on a laptop at a screen, and that's all that they could do. So with that.
So yeah, we have a couple minutes for questions if anyone wants to step up to the mic. Okay. Also, usually this is the time when people kind of start to fall out. So please do your evals. If you like this, you want to know more about this stuff, please put that in the evals. But we'll just stick around now for questions. If anyone wants to ask anything, step up to the mic. You can move the microphone, please. Go ahead.
You had mentioned that you have challenges with MFA on Macs. Have you evaluated any ideas on how to address that? Because we have exactly the same challenge.
Well, with Office 2016 and it capable of doing MFA, it got us past that hurdle for the most part, but now we're looking at how we get the equivalent of like a workplace join scenario going with them.
For the Macs.
Yeah.
You talked about joiners process. What about leavers and movers? Did that have any effect on what you were doing?
Well,
in terms of licensing, for example, if you're licensing ADP and so on.
Yeah, we have some scripts that we run that look at the leaver process, and if account remains dormant for a certain period of time, it'll take away that license and reuse it in a pool for the other licenses that we have. We did quite a bit of work in license management when we went for that Office 365 tenant, you know, licensing schema, so to speak.
We have all our entitlement centered on FIM, so it has both the joiner and the leaver process scenario built into it, so that we're actually, you know, revoking licenses as we've disabled and deleted accounts.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. We started off with scripts.
Yes.
And then we created the FIM repetition once we understood what we needed to get done for sure. And we're improving upon that, I think, as we speak.
Mm-hmm. We are.
I've got a follow-up question about the difficulties you're having with Azure MFA. What were some of the situations or the dependencies that were causing you to have multiple instances of MFA? And I guess another question follow-up to that is, why did you choose to go with Azure MFA instead of someone in third party?
Well, first part is with MFA, where we were seeing challenges is it was a session token. So if we had people closing their browsers and then relaunching it and having to go through the entire login process all over again, and they weren't real happy about that. So getting to a persistent token is where we're trying to get to with the workplace join bit. And the Azure MFA choice, I mean, we looked at a bunch of different products.
We did, and tested them.
And in the end, we were looking for something that fit and worked seamlessly. And with all of the other elements that we had in place, this one made the most sense in terms of how we could integrate it and how we could leverage it, along with the conditional access parts.
And I think the language was available to us as well. You talked about having it available in 23 different languages. That was a big benefit. And we saw other tools, not all of them could do that as well.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hey, I want to ask you, challenge for you was at the beginning you had too much people having permissions, too many permissions in the cloud. You came across that with the PIM. So you put the user probably in PIM. Is that a PIM solution on Azure, or did you put them into your local one, saying permissions on time or something like that?
So it's the Azure PIM solution that we're using, and we're using that for all of the admins that manage all of our Azure accounts, so for all the roles right now, specifically started around the global admins.
For your on-prem Exchange environment, did you have a tunnel requirement there? Did you have to deal with two-factor? And in the hybrid environment, did you deal with two-factor for the on-prem and the other 65 users?
We don't have two-factor for our on-prem environment at that point. In order to get full access to the on-prem Exchange, you end up coming through VPN. That's considered the second factor for that one, except for Exchange Active Sync on the mobile. That was really the only thing we exposed.
How about some of the improvements we could see as we were making it more secure as we actually give more capability as well, for sure.
So just to follow up to his question, are there any on-prem applications or things like server console access that you're doing MFA for today?
I didn't hear that all the way. Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Yeah, or on-prem server MFA? The acoustics are not easy here.
So as a follow-up to the on-prem Exchange question, are there any on-prem applications or capabilities that you have MFA natively for today, and how did you achieve that with Azure MFA?
So with the, if you mean like other apps other than the Exchange?
So like for example,
well, in that case, what we're using and leveraging for a lot of those things are app proxy.
Yeah.
And at that point, we've actually created where there's the two-factor authentication coming back through app proxy to get back to those types of the web-based applications.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, everybody.